Welcome to RealiTV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend as we break down all the best and worst of the shows we love and love to hate. This week, we have an incredible comeback with Jersey Shore. I'm wrapping up a little polygamy show with a whole lot of lip smacking, Three Wives, One Husband. Teen Mom OG, because I'm diehard until the bitter end. We also have Little People, Big World. It's back, and although I don't watch the show anymore, I needed to see if Jeremy's wife, Audrey, is still a raging narcissist. Spoiler alert, she is. And last but not least, Married at First Sight. Before we dive into Teen Mom OG, please remember to subscribe to the podcast so it's delivered to wherever you listen to your podcast automatically every week. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at RealiTVPod everywhere. And for bonus episodes on everything from true crime to munchy moms, that's what I call moms with Munchausen, and other recaps, secret confessions from listeners, go to patreon.com/RealiTVPod. This week, I'm recapping Real Housewives of New York, answering a Would You Rather from a premium subscriber, and I have a few more secret submissions that involve some Kate Gosselin, and I'm going to sneak in one of my own, but I'm not going to say which one. Pretty amazing stuff going on Patreon. Now, we have a lot to unpack with our moms and dads this week on Teen Mom OG, so I'm just going to jump right in. Caitlin is still at her treatment facility, so she's missing Christmas. I felt so badly for Tyler having to take it all on by himself, but soon enough, Caitlin's back. And when Nova said thank you for coming back, tears down my face. Although, I'm still me, and I had a side eye that there wasn't a big mommy-daughter embrace, hugs, and kisses like you would expect. I mean, I would not let my kids go for days if I would have been gone that long. I do that when my kids come home from school every day, but I get it. Every family and your affection style might be different, I guess. Now, I gotta give it to Caitlin for having a plan for aftercare, right? Okay, she knows what to do. She's gonna make weekly appointments with her therapist. Cross your fingers, it's not with Droopy Dog. And she's also going to see a psychiatrist. Make sure that the psychiatrist, her therapist talk together. Okay, it's sounding good. She's also going to be riding her horse. Remember the horse Callie we haven't seen for a while? Hopefully it's still alive. And she's also going to teach Nova how to ride. I approve. Grade A, big star at the top of the paper. Great little mommy-daughter bonding time, even though you know how I feel about horses. We don't get along. I'm terrified. Now the Baltieres are on a roll today because I even love what they're doing to the Octagon house. However, when we get upstairs in that shower, it is freaking hard not to be annoyed when Kate says stuff like, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted. Again, we all get it. She's depressed. She's been through a lot of really intense stuff. But when she says that in front of Tyler, who has been filling about 4 to 5 full-time roles to everyone in his life while Kate has been in paradise, I can see how he would feel a pang of resentment just on a human level. But then that resentment that Kate senses, I mean, if we're sensing it, she has to too. It just causes her to feel bad. It's a crazy cycle. The next we see, Kate is saying that she needs to get into a routine. Again, good, great, actually. Yes, routine is an excellent idea. But then she's yelling at Nova, lay down, take your nap, now. You can tell Tyler is dying to jump in there, kind of be like the good cop, bad cop. And you can tell he just wants to tell Kate, like, you gotta be more gentle with her. After all, he's been primary caretaker, and now mom is back, and all those established roles have just been shaken up again. But Tyler, say what you will about his stupid fashion choices, but God damn it, he is a good guy. Kate breaks down later and expresses her feelings that she's not handling being back home very well and she wants to go back to treatment. I mean, you could just suck the oxygen out of that room. I am sure Tyler had a jolt of, oh crap, not again. I've got to do this all on my own. Here we go again. But he doesn't say any of that. All he says is, Caitlin, I love you. Don't worry about me. He's not leaving. He's not going anywhere. So Caitlin is going to go back, and she says she's going to work her ass off on this trauma. Now, fast forward, we've got producer Kirthy at the helm of the Tira Rain packing facility. Oh, sorry, I should be more specific. She's on the floor, and Tyler is in the kitchen with Kirthy and Kate. And Caitlin has just gotten off the phone with her treatment place. They recommended to her that she should try outpatient near her home in Michigan with those daily appointments that Kate herself was just talking about. But Caitlin has her mindset. She wants to go back to Arizona, and she can set her own schedule. She thinks that she wants to be there for at least 6 weeks. You can see it in Tyler's eyes that he's stuck. Yes, of course he wants his wife to do what's best for her, but she's been home, what was it, like 2 or 3 days at this point after she had been gone for 8 weeks, and now she's leaving again for another 6. I'm with Tyler. Just try the outpatient for a week, if only for Nova's sake, who's now had her mom leave at least 3 times for an extended period of time, and she's only 3 herself. I was super relieved to see Tyler was out with his sister Amber, just a person to vent to and get all of your emotions out, because he needs that too. And as much as I feel for Caitlin, I do, but I raised my hands in victory. Like, I literally raised my arms up when Tyler said that off camera, he had had a conversation with Kate. And he told her, you know, what about our kid? What about Nova? What is best for her? I think outpatient is what's best for Nova, and I think inpatient is what's best for you. And then Caitlin looked at Tyler and said, Nova will manage. I mean, for as much trauma work that Kate has been doing, does she not see that's what her own parents thought about Kate during her childhood, which is why she felt abandoned and neglected? I don't think Caitlin's deliberately being selfish, but I almost think a professional needs to break it down for her or give her the structure she's saying she needs and tell her, you need to do outpatient. This is your structure. And what about appointments for Nova? Is no one talking like maybe we need Nova and Kate in therapy together? I don't think 3 is too young, is it? How confusing is it for a 3-year-old to figure out if we ourselves are scratching our heads? Just this entire situation of Caitlin not wanting to live her life at home with her husband and daughter, it is a lot to think about. Okay, did anyone else start bawling when Kate dropped Nova off at daycare? Nova didn't even want to go to school to begin with. And then us knowing that Nova isn't going to get to see her mom for a long time, but she doesn't know it herself, I couldn't. Kid and parent separation, it gets me every time. I get a lump in my throat when I drop my own kids off at school in the morning, and I know I'm going to see them in a couple hours. It's just the thought of dropping your kids off and them not knowing that you're going to be gone for months when they get home. Ugh, forget it. So back at home, Kate dumps her dirty laundry into her suitcase. I mean, I guess that's one way for TSA not to rifle through your shit. And then she heads out. Now let's talk about our Amber. Before we even jump into her segment, right at the beginning of the episode where they say, like, oh, previously on Teen Mom, if you look at Andrew earlier in the season, never even occurred to me until I saw this. When they flash back to him, he is easily 30 to 50 pounds lighter. I mean, staying in Indiana has not done a body good. Now, right off the bat, Amber is still stationed on that stuffed sloth while Andrew the Giant is wheezing away at his laptop in the other room. He's Skyping with 2 wannabe Max and Neves, and guess what? They have great news. And I quote, that pizza thing from 5 years ago got financing. I swear if we find out that this is just some local pizza shop commercial, I will, first of all, die laughing, and then I'm flying out to California to see this place in person. But not before producer David asked the shadiest and most passive-aggressive question, which was awesome. So, Andrew, do you miss working? I mean, you're obviously doing a lot of work here, but we wait to shade the guy. It was amazing. So Andrew just kind of, you know, in his lay-back, chill California. Yeah, I mean, I always like being on set. It's good. This guy, he's got the same no sense of go-get-em-ness, just no oomph to him, right? And neither does Amber. And that's probably their main thread of compatibility. They don't like doing anything. They don't like working, but they think they are doing everything. Well, in walks Amber at this point. Andrew breaks the news that he's going to work on this 8-week project in LA. So would she want to go along? Gee, I wonder if Amber wants to lay on a couch in LA. What do you think she's going to say? Well, that's when we hear the baby's name is going to be James for the first time. And she makes it clear that not only does she want to go to LA, but I guess I'm going to be spending money while you're making money, because she wants to live in a really nice place if she's going to be there with a newborn. I swear to you, Andrew has made Amber believe that he is some heir to a multi-million dollar condo in Malibu, and he's a genius filmmaker, and if they lived in LA, he could provide for her, but oh, since they're in Indiana, she's going to have to foot the bill. I mean, Amber, if Andrew were capable of bringing in that income, don't you think he would have graduated from wearing that damn Easter gingham shirt that he's been wearing the entire time, and he would be on some sort of dieting system that would stop him from morphing into Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs? Now fast forward to Amber in the kitchen, and her feelings are hurt. Boo Boo wanted to go to a friend's house for a sleepover instead of spending time with Amber, so now it's all about the Amber show. Well, she says she can't handle the BS anymore because she doesn't know what Gary and Christina are saying, and Leah doesn't want to go to her house much because she wants to see her friends or something. Well, first of all, I can't stand the BS either because this editing is messed up. This was the same dinner that Crystal Meth was cooking up last week. Nice try, MTV. I remember that maroon tank top squeezing at her back fat. Second of all, Amber, maybe take a look inside yourself with those terrible eyeglass frames and see that maybe Leah doesn't want to go over to your house because you don't do anything with her. You lay around on the floor and or the couch, you cozy up to whatever man is in your life, and you drag Leah along to watch you call someone else babe all weekend. Of course she isn't interested in stroking your ego or making you look like a good mom that you're not. It's all about how it makes Amber feel. Not once did she say what it might be like for Leah. How does Leah feel about it? And she even said, and I can't even believe she actually had the balls to say it out loud, I mean, I'm staying living here in Indiana for her. I don't even want to live here anymore. The only reason I'm here is to see her. Oh, wow. What a sacrifice you're making for the child you chose to bring into this world, Amber. You know what? Leah sure does owe you something in return for sticking around to see her every 2 months. Well, not only does Leah owe Amber, Gary owes it to Amber to swap weekends because he gets to see her all the time. Yeah, because she lives there, Amber. And you could see her all the time, too, if you change out of your footsie jammies, get off the goddamn couch, and drive your ass over there. Then later, and back on the bed, Amber has now dragged the sloth and the human sloth into bed with her. The conversation turns to how Gary is an asshole for not changing the schedule so Leah can see Amber when Amber wants to see her. So the producer jumps in to ask, so what's the solution? Well, Amber says, everyone tells her to go to court and get things modified. But then she explains that all the way to make herself look like the martyr. What Amber doesn't realize is that we all know she doesn't want full custody. And she doesn't even want 50-50 custody, let's be real. She just wants Leah when it's convenient for her. And since Amber doesn't plan ahead anything in her life, she gets butt hurt when her spontaneous, convenient time doesn't coincide with a 9-year-old schedule between school, friends, activities, and just life. I really think if Amber put even an ounce of energy into anything else besides whatever guy she's with, she would probably knock it out of the park because she's very hard-headed and she's very stubborn. But unfortunately, I just don't see a career ever happening for Amber. Now, let's talk about Macy. She and her friend are getting pedicures. Hope she doesn't catch something contagious like I seem to get a handful of the times that I've gone, but no time to worry about that because there are more contagious things to worry about, like Ryan's sperm, because Macy has learned of Mackenzie's pregnancy. She says she's excited for Bentley. I believe that, but I don't think she really gives a shit about the pregnancy itself, to be honest. She's just worried about Bentley being around both of these idiots because we all know Ryan being a dad doesn't change shit about him. And later, when Macy is having lunch with her mom, it's confirmed that Ryan still hasn't passed a drug screen, and people talk, Ryan has been seen using again. Now, over at the doctor's office, Mackenzie and her new terrible ombre hair dye job have dragged Ryan along to see how his next recipient of child support is coming along. Now, you may be saying, oh, Jody, come on, that's a little harsh, you hit low, and maybe you're right. After all, Ryan did have two dum-dums in his mouth as he was drifting off to sleep and rolling his eyes in the car. He must have been a very enthusiastic dad and a very good boy to have made Jem give him two suckers today. Well, let's go over to that home that codependence and helicopter parenting built. Ron, tell us about that baby.
Mackenzie's pregnant. We don't have a name. Gah!
Okay, Jen, this is where you try to cover for Ryan to make him look better by just having someone else speak for him. Huh, Mackenzie, tell us about that, you know, that funny thing. It was so funny. Tell us about that funny thing. Well, I wanted to tell Ryan all day, but I didn't. So we got fast food, and I put it in the fast food bag, and he thought it was a fork, so he threw it like, ah. She put a used pregnancy test with urine all over it in his food. I'm with Ryan for the first time ever. That is fucking disgusting. Well, then she says that Ryan just started running around the room. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then she was like, Ryan, we're married. And then he said, call my mom. Yeah, totally normal reaction for a 30-year-old man. He's probably 31 at this point. No, that's not cute. That's not endearing. That's just messed up. And later when they're in the dining room, Jen is making eyes with Mackenzie and trying to pry it out of Ryan if he plans on staying sober this time around, or, you know, are you just going to piss around and mess up this kid's childhood while everyone else picks up the pieces? You know Jen, she's a planner. But no worries, because Ryan thinks having a new baby around will help keep him focused on sobriety. Because nothing will give you time to reflect and make changes deep within oneself than while your life has just dumped all of your puzzle pieces on the ground for you to pick up, with one foot in your left thumb because you finally got the baby to fall asleep in your arms, and God bless it, if that floor creaks and you wake up this baby, we're getting a divorce. But back to the brisket on the table. Larry has prepared a sermon of sorts, and while Jen is fogging her glasses up and Mackenzie is staring at the cornbread on her plate that she's trying to pretend she doesn't want to eat anymore, the two black holes in Ryan's eyes glaze over, and he's the only one not touched and moved by Larry's words. Yeah, he's a real Ayanla there, Lair. Life changer, motivator. Cannot wait for the book. Now, what the hell was going on later when Mackenzie and Ryan were in the car? They're both sucking on suckers again, and Ryan is acting like a toddler. He's saying he's cold, and then he starts breathing all hard and heavy for attention. It really creeped me out. It's like his default is to act like a three-year-old. It's bizarre. And then guess what? Ryan passes out in the car. And then when they get back to his house, they get inside and he starts saying that it's freezing. And then he says that he thinks he and Mackenzie should just separate for 9 months. Because he's happy. Remember, guys? He's so happy for this baby. He just cannot contain himself. So excited. Such a great dad, remember? Well, guess what else I remembered? I have a little thing on my computer called Google. And it told me that Ryan's symptoms of irritability, tiredness, chills, and anger are symptoms of withdrawal. Just throwing it out there. Gee, I wonder how this story's gonna end. Well, hey, Mackenzie, I got a question for you too. What about that open letter to Macy when you counted down how many minutes Macy knew Ryan was using drugs and she chose not to say anything? Well, we're counting your minutes for you, Mackenzie, so right back at you. Now, next week looks like the reunion, and if MTV follows what it's done in the past, it'll probably be a part one, part two. So we got that to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. Now, I think as long as we're over here on MTV, let's talk about some Jersey Shore. Who doesn't love this show? I love Jersey Shore when it originally aired, and it feels like it takes me back to a whole different lifetime ago. I had little babies. It was my escape from reality. And now, look at how far we've come. My kids are raising themselves with iPads, and they don't even need me for hours unless the Wi-Fi is weak or they can't find a charger. This show is magic. Jenny and Snooki have new faces. Pauly D's got a little Botox himself, but he's the best. No one can not like Pauly. Then there's Ronnie. God, things are not going to end well for Ron. He's not with Sammy, thank God. It's a miracle that those two were not on a Dateline episode for a double homicide against each other years ago. Now that I think of it, I don't even know if that's possible to have a double homicide, but if there was a way, these two idiots would have been the ones to find out. So Ronnie has some horrible blonde highlights. I don't know what's going on with that, but he's with new Sammy and she's pregnant. Whew. Ron as a dad, we're going to need a moment or several to process this, but whatever the new Sammy's name is, it doesn't matter. She's just new Sammy. Well, she comes walking in with an ever so casual sweatshirt off the shoulder and says, "So I have a photographer coming to do this maternity shoot." And Ronnie goes, "Wait, like a pregnancy shoot?" "No, Ron, a maternity shoot is where they come and take photos of your broke-ass washer and dryer that you're using in that rented house of yours." He is just the worst. He's so freaking stupid. Now, the one photo that MTV showed where Ronnie's head is peeking out, where it looks like his head is on the girlfriend's body, oh my God, it gave me life. I paused it. I took a screenshot of it. If you want a copy of it, feel free. Send me a little message and I'll send it to you because it is everything. Now, I also need to find out who this photographer is so we can stalk their page because some of these other photos he or she took, they look like circus performers in them or something. There's one of them on a bed. A foot is blurred out. There's another one of them in the hallway. But the light switches and the outlets are clearly in focus. I mean, it is just bad. So I would love to get my hands on some other photos if these are the ones that they're choosing to share on air worldwide. And also, there's no chance in hell that these two are ever going to last. Now, let's talk about Vinny. He's got a new girlfriend. She's cute. She's slightly alien fetus-y, but she seems nice. Vinny is very thin. I don't mind the facial hair so much, but I'm more bothered by that waify Vinny. Now, Vinny's mom, I have a confession to make. Don't think of me any differently, but I think I might be Vinny's mom. In the words of Azin, like just a little bit, I love my son's little butt, and I bribe my way into him letting me squeeze his little hiney. I give him the option. He can say no. I mean, if he doesn't want to have a piece of candy for a little squeezy, that's fine. I'm pro-choice across the board. Dina is also back. She and her mom, they got matching lips like Kim Zolciak and Brielle, but they went with a different kind of lip. Their top lip kind of goes up, like it touches the bottom of their nostril kind of lip, not the puffy kind of lip like Kim and Brielle, but it's bad. It's really, really bad. Now, Mike is also back, and he's with his girlfriend. She is cute. Again, don't get me wrong. I think she's cute. But I will bet you anything that Mike would have considered her a grenade back in the day. I would not have. But my, oh, my, oh, my, as Lieutenant Joe Kenda says, how the standards change once you are broke, off roids, and you might go to prison for tax evasion. Now, Sam is not back. Supposedly because she's just so happy with her new boyfriend and she's moving forward. Yeah, okay. You know it's because she doesn't want to see Ron because she's jealous as all hell that he's got a girlfriend who's pregnant. Now, I'm thrilled Sam isn't back because I wish she would have stayed home years ago. Ron laughs about Sam not coming, but that laugh is BS. He's not over her, she's not over him. Now, as everyone is getting to the house, which is borderline nice-ish, it kind of reminds me of the house Cynthia rented in Spain on Real Housewives of Atlanta, but Mike can't make it last minute because he's got to get permission from the judge. To be honest, he didn't miss much besides Ron making a dick comment about Snooki having a new face to her face, and then the moment when Dina admitted to making a pact with Sam that she wouldn't allow anyone to talk bad about her. That annoyed the shit out of me. That is bullshit. If you don't want people talking about you, Sam, then you come down and stick up for yourself. I would bet anything that they are all not only annoyed with her because she's just annoying, but also I bet they all probably would have made more money if she would have come because it would have been a full cast reunion for this series. I'm certain they all went in there with an agreement as a total package, and then last minute, Sam backs out and screwed them all over. And that's where the resentment comes in. And Ronnie's comment later at the bar, he said, if she was our friend, she would have had our backs and she would be here. Just a theory of mine, but I really think it's likely. Now with Mike. Of course, the judge is going to let him go because I'm sure Mike's attorney was like, hey, judge, very lawyerly speak, right? Hey, judge, if Mr. Sorrentino goes to do this show in Miami, he can pay X amount of money back to the government. However, if he goes to jail, he's going to be costing the government even more money. I might be talking out of my ass, but that's my take on it. Now, you guys, the Sam doll, the best part of the whole episode, and I know we are all living for it because everyone's talking about it. The voice coming out of that doll, even Dina, who was supposed to stick up for her, was laughing. As always, we get some classic clubbing scenes, which always end with Snooki taking a digger in the road. Now, why Paulie thought that one girl was so drop-dead gorgeous in the club, I don't have a clue. I mean, I think she was very pretty, but I just think that Paulie can do better. Now, can we talk about Dina for a moment? I feel like I've wanted to get this off my chest for years. Is it safe for me here, Sister Wow style, is it safe for me to say I don't enjoy Dina? I think she's always tried way too hard to be Snooki, but she lacks the original charm of Snooki. Vinny can't stand Dina. I don't think he ever has. So when Dina does stuff like she did in the cab in this episode and smacks him in the face, I thought he was going to lose it. I think Dina tries to play it like she's all the guy's best friend, just like Snooki and Jenny are with the guys, but I don't think they look at her in the same way they look at Snooki and Jenny. I mean, I know Dina's been around for a long time, but I still see her as the newcomer who's made herself way too at home too soon. Am I the only one feeling this way? Let me know what you feel about Dina. Now, back at the house, the power is out. I would be shocked if you told me producers did not plan that or turn a circuit breaker off. Snooki jumps in the pool. She's got to pee, which is just a reminder we all needed as this summer is approaching. Thanks, Snooki. Inspired me to just up my anti-anxiety meds. Now, Vinny also violates a pizza and insults every woman who's premenstrual right now, quietly raising my hand, because he tosses those carbs aside like we all wish Molly would have with Luis on 90 Day Fiance. Then Dina's boo-hooing about Ron not calling her. I couldn't take it. Run upstairs with your two short shorts. I can't take Dina. Now the next morning, Snooki wakes up in her leather pants still. Ooh, they're still damp because she forgot that she even jumped in the pool. Can you even imagine what she's got brewing down there? Now, she goes downstairs, discovers the power's still out, so she decides that opening the refrigerator door would be a great idea. Just let the last of whatever cold air is in there out, and now it's gone. It's probably a good thing the pizza boxes were left outside, which leads to the funniest Snooki scene to me. She's carrying the pizza boxes to the garbage, and there's ants all over them. One of them starts crawling on her, and she's screaming, saying, "This is happening. It's on my arm. It's happening." God, I love her. Now, how she ate that pizza that had been sitting out all night outside, I have no idea. No freaking way would that ever happen. That's disgusting. But the ant thing killed me. Now, later at lunch, they're all talking about the usual, you know, implants and breastfeeding. And then Nicole starts crying because she hears her son's favorite song, which coincidentally is my boy's favorite song, too. It's that thunder, lightning. I'm not going to sing because I'm already subjecting you to the sound of my voice. You really don't want to hear my singing voice. But I get it. I think all moms get it. And then Nicole's probably feeling guilty because she's out having a great old time partying and she should probably be at home with her kid. But damn, if I was getting paid to basically go to summer camp and drink for free, crap, I'd be there in a heartbeat. Well, Vinny and Polly leave to go get Mike from the airport, and Ronnie gets a little dad dance at the bar. And that little MVP reunion at the airport, it was beautiful. It was thrilling for me. Mike just pigeon-toes his way into my heart sometimes, and that little leather backpack of his, so douchey, but so Mike and enjoyable. And it's the way that MVP plays off one another. Like, they're all three old ladies in Boca. I could just watch those three all day long together. So eventually, they make it all back to the house, and Ron has apparently torn up the toilet like a friggin' rhino, and then he clogs it. I would have to move out. I don't know how everyone's going in there like they want to see it, they want to smell it. No way I would be out of there. I would have to pull an Erica Jane, sorry, staying in a hotel. I'll come back in the morning, we'll play, but I'm not laying my head down in this place. I mean, I literally cannot even talk about it. And Ron gets backsplash from the toilet on his shoes because he was trying to plunge it. Ugh. Now, thankfully, we get MVP in the confessional room, kind of breaking things up, change of pace. The Sammy doll is in there. We get a flashback of Mike slamming his head into the concrete wall in Italy. Just classic Jersey Shore humor. Then we go to a much more grown-up and fancy Sunday dinner at the Delano. Little douchey with the, ooh, tasty sparkling water. Come on, guys. But the family comes together and telling Mike how they forgive him. They love him for sticking to sobriety and they're thrilled to have him back. But Ron's gotta ruin it. He takes it as his opportunity to just rail into Mike again. What a dickhead. I'll tell you what we were thinking in the Huff household as we were watching this was, this is like serious shit for Mike because you know the judge and the prosecutors, they're going to be seeing this stuff. And when Ron says stuff like, "You're a bad person and you're dishonest, I don't trust him," that's not good on a real life, serious level for Mike. Now, Ron does say that he forgives him, but I don't know. Ron is a volatile person, so who knows what is going to set him off later and what he's going to say. Now, back at the house, Dina and Snooki drag the Sammy doll, and it's still screaming, "Ron, Ron, stop, Ron," the whole time, and then they fling her into the pool, but the thing is still screaming, and the way it's floating in the pool, it looks like it's a drowning crime scene. But wait, no time to joke, because Snooki realizes she lost her wedding ring, and that's when, what, there's like five or six of them at that point outside. They're all digging through the grass. And that's what I love about them. They are total assholes. They're real idiots, but I love how they come together. I think it's really cute that they were seriously helping her. They dropped everything for 2 hours to dig through the grass. I'll tell you what I was thinking as I was watching that. They needed to call me. Now, I'm going to brag here for a moment because I once found my dad's lost gold wedding band in our backyard that probably had no less than 15 to 20 trees. We had raked up all the leaves, huge leaf piles in our backyard, and I went into the leaf piles and I found it in the middle of a leaf pile. It was a real highlight of my life. I know you're all super impressed. Don't everyone call me at once to go find your things, but I mean, I gotta say, that's some real skill. Now, next week, the title of the episode is Sunday Vin Day, and this is the description. Ronnie clogs all the toilets in the house, and Nicole and Vinny's past jeopardizes their friendship. Only on Jersey Shore can you have clogged toilets and destroyed friendships in the same sentence, and it makes perfect sense. Now, after a quick break, let's hate watch Audge on Little People Big World and see what happened on the conclusion of Three Wives, One Husband. Sunday nights on TLC are just dead now. We had those several glorious weeks of polygamy, and now we went cold turkey. But at least we have this little here recap of Three Wives, One Husband to remember the good times. We must start with the discussion of that community pool. My kids better never complain about our pool being crowded again in the summer or not seeing their friends there, because I think I'm just going to show them this clip and be like, look, if you want to go live in a red dirt mountain, swim in the pool that was used in the scene in the movie Vacation. You know the one I'm talking about, right before they tied Dinky to the bumper. Go right ahead, or keep it up, and I'll just be wearing my raincoat into the pool like the moms in this town. Now, as a reminder, sister wives Katrina and Lillian have 17 kids between them, and they share husband Enoch. Enoch is very touchy-feely with his wives. He loves a smacky kiss. I would do the sound, but you already know it, and you'd probably turn me off right here. But this 17-kid clan is nothing. You see, Enoch's dad built the town after he got out of prison for having three wives and 28 kids. Nowadays, Enoch takes the legacy on himself, and he builds all the houses in town. What's really weird is that his brother Christian shows up, and the narrator, the producers, they just brush right over the fact that when Christian was growing up, they said he lived in the city with his mom, but he would come back to the ranch in the summer to visit his dad. So is this like a Mary and Cody situation where they live apart and just pretend they're still polygamist? Like, you can't just throw that out and expect viewers like us not to create some kind of polygamous fan fiction. It's really irresponsible journalism, if you ask me. Well, this brother Christian and his wife are moving to Rockland Ranch, and they have a son named Uriel. I had never heard of this name Uriel until 2 years ago, and now I feel like everywhere I go, I see a little boy named Uriel. Unfortunately, I cringe at the name because when my daughter was in first grade, there was a boy named Uriel, but she had a really hard time saying it, so she would call him Urinal. So to all the parents out there, do the right thing. When you choose a name for your child, you have to run down the list of possible nicknames for them that other kids might give them. Or you ask a salty friend, throw it out in our Facebook group, you know, so you can head off all this future teasing. Now, my daughter did not tease him. She didn't know, nor could she help that she was saying it incorrectly because she's got some speech issues. But to be honest, it's not that far off. So apologies to any Uriels I've offended, but come on, parents, get your act together. Well, Christian wants to have not just one Uriel, he wants to have 50 kids. Of course he does, because he won't have to take care of them. It's all date nights and honeymoons every other year when you add wives and kids. I don't see why the women don't see this or see it sooner. I think Abel's wives started catching on, but I mean, a little too late. They were damn close to poisoning one another at that point. Well, Christian and his wife are in their probationary period of 6 months before they can permanently live at the ranch. So he's staying with Enoch or a brother's home, something next door to the Morrisons. They love a big tortilla wrap, as evidenced by Christian's as he shoved it into his face just centimeters above his plate. This guy is starting to look like a real dick. And Susie Morrison is onto it. As she is sweeping up an inexplicable amount of dust and hair and fur, for real, did you see that? It was like the underbrush that you got junk crew sweeps up after they empty one of those hoarded homes. Well, she's sweeping up whatever dead animal along with that hair, and she mutters, "Son of a Christian Foster." Emmy knows her voice is kind of similar to mine, but I think it's more annoying. Cross my fingers. I hope it's more annoying. Well, Christian is outside blasting off rounds with his guns, and he says that he's killing cows, and defends that by saying, "We're allowed to kill off predators. My dad used to kill off crows, and he built this place, and we're his legacy, so you're just going to be like the spoiled rich kid who slides his way into being president of his frat because daddy was too? Ugh. I'm starting to understand why people don't like Christian. But you know what? There is a system and an order. There's this committee made of all men, shocking, and they're going to have a meeting to discuss this shooting incident. Well, Christian starts out, I'd say, pretty damn defiant, saying that pests and predators are allowed to be shot. Thankfully, the other men there have read a book or two, or they know that when bullets go up, they must come down, and that falling bullets can kill people. The saddest part and the most telling part of a whole episode was when Christian's wife Sasha is cooking, and she's talking about why she knows accepting a new wife into her marriage, and as she's explaining why she knows it's right for her, she stops mid-sentence, and she cannot come up with anything. Hello, listen to that silence in your brain, girl. If you are struggling to find a reason, and you're asking people how they do it, and you know you are going to be unhappy and jealous and struggle, then don't. If you don't care and you're all about it, like, go for it. As with anything, I don't care what you do in your bedroom or your house. If you contribute to society and you don't raise assholes, I'm your biggest ally and best friend. But if you are unhappy and some person, most often a man, is pushing you into something or explaining why you need to sacrifice and struggle so that he can be happy, no. Just say no. Now let's talk about this Costco trip with Lillian and Katrina. Damn it, that family loves some cheese and tortilla chips as much as I do. I almost started to change my mind about things, but all it took was seeing toddlers running around a bonfire, sitting on a swing, just one push away from being flung into the fire. Not to mention that one kid that loves climbing up that flagpole. You know, you've seen it every episode. It's that same 7-year-old. He's a good 25, 30 feet up in the air. No one's around. God forbid the day that that kid falls down and cracks his head open and breaks his back. Now, at this point, we learn that Christian and Sasha made a 40-hour round-trip visit to a potential second wife in the Midwest. Spoiler alert, it wasn't me. Now, Christian said he told this woman that he loved her and he would be honored if she felt the same and he wants her to be part of their family. To which the girl said nothing. And then when he was driving her back, she was in the back seat crying. He said he has no idea why, but this is raising the hair on the back of my neck and major red flags. Anyone else? Now, I'm not saying he did anything to her, but perhaps she is not just young like they say she is. Maybe she is just barely legal and scared to death that some 30-year-old who likes boxing in his basement and shooting off guns around children is now way too into her within a very short period of time. Something seems off. Sasha herself is a little hot and bothered because she said that Christian was trying a little too hard to impress this woman, wasn't acting like himself. How freaking weird would that be to see your partner do that? And I do just kind of get an icky vibe off of Christian, so I can easily see that happening. I suppose I have to talk about the legal stuff going on in the episode. It's kind of exhausting to me because we just went through this whole thing with the Browns so many times, but since these families are actually living in Utah, they might really go to prison. It's more serious for them. Marina Abel's third wife, who likes to push her daughter's head around while she climbs on furniture, says that she's worried, but, and I quote, "God won't forsake us." So, you know, it'll probably all work itself out. Real safe strategy. Well, Enoch and his wives, Katrina and Lillian, are taking a more proactive approach. They're driving to a rally, and Enoch instructs them to make sure they do up your makeup and hair to look as non-oppressed and liberated as possible, and just pretend, look really happy, just pretend, like a ton, like you're free thinkers. That is a direct quote what he said. Pretend like a ton, look like you're free thinkers. Oh, okay, well, that's really going to change minds, Enoch. Good job. Now, once they're at the rally, Enoch speaks to a fairly small crowd. Our buddy Joe Darger is there, and he has Enoch talk to the person who wrote up the bill to outlaw it. They get a little TV time, but not much more than that. Well, now we fast forward a few months, and guess what? Sasha, Christian's wife, is pregnant with a baby girl. Little Uriel, who looks like he might have fallen off a flagpole or smashed his face into one of the thousands of death traps around at the ranch, is a little upset that it's a girl at first, but like any boy, you give him some goldfish or fruit snacks and now he's all good. Back at Enoch's, he gets a phone call that the law didn't pass. Now, what I'm wondering is this the law that the Browns originally won years ago? You know I love a deep dive, but I don't think I have it in me to dig through Utah state laws. Now, we got to talk about the annual Rockland Ranch Dance. Enoch is doing this spin move with Katrina at one point, and I thought her hair was going to wrap around his neck and strangle him, which, you know, how my mind works. It led me to thinking about how Rapunzel, she really wasn't that smart, because in the movie, why didn't she just use her long hair to choke out her captors while she had the chance? I mean, she could have done it to Mother Gothel. She could have done it to the two thug guys. I mean, I don't know about the fairy tale, but the Disney one, I think we are led to believe that she's much smarter than she really is. Anyway, well, this is all we hear from the folks at Rockland Ranch, because this short-lived series is over. Sister Wives is done. Three Wives, One Husband is done. What are Sunday nights going to be like without our polygamist friends? Now, if you need some more polygamy in your life, I'm just going to be giving you a quick heads up. Hope it's okay with you, Carrie, but I'm going to be talking with Carrie from the Sip and Shine podcast about Warren Jeffs in the next couple of weeks. I'll give you a heads up. I'm actually a little scared about it because I think the FLDS probably has some Scientology-style tactics. I watch Big Love on HBO, and those people can be capable of anything. Well, you know who else is capable of anything, just in a different way? Little people, big world. See what I did there? Now, I haven't watched this show in quite a few years because, well, let's face it, it's because of Audj. And if you think I'm some sort of monster because of how I talk about this chick or how I'm about to talk about this chick, to that I say, watch just one scene with her and you will get it. In fact, quite a few of you even said you never understood who I was talking about or why I had so much venom for her until you saw the season premiere. Now, because of this, my curiosity got the best of me, and I thought I was in need of a really good, snarky Audj rant. And away we go. We start out at Zach and Tori's house. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Zach is the little person twin brother. He's like the oldest in the family. He's married to Tori, who we like. They have a baby named Jackson, who's also a little person. Tori is of average stature. I enjoyed the frankness of these two, saying how the first few weeks of having a baby are so incredibly tough. It's more exhausting than anyone can explain to you. Granted, their baby's only 5 weeks old, so take their advice with a grain of salt. But they aren't trying to make having an infant be a Pinteresty gingham and triangle banner misty dream, and I enjoy that. Cut to Amy, and she's got the big house and the divorce, and she's doing her makeup and her hair, getting all dressed up. She has never looked better. She looks so happy, and in walks her new boyfriend, Chris. He's also average-sized, and Amy is all mushy-gushy. Not the Amy I am used to. She was a badass, take no prisoner, no back talk kind of chick with Matt. But this guy really has softened her up. He seems interested enough in her. And I mean, let's be honest, I really don't care about this guy. I really just want to see what the hell's going on with Jeremy, the average-sized twin, and his wife, Audrey. So let's just get over there. Well, what do you know? Here we are. Audj in her stupid, always more dad hat, which she shills online. In other words, it's the cheapest hat that they could buy in bulk from China, and they throw on her catchphrase that she's trying to make happen, which is always more. Now, under the hat, she has her hair in two braids, and she's wearing a Carhartt coat, and she's saying she's tired, and she's had these sharp pains in her ribs. Yeah, bitch, that's what being 30 weeks pregnant does to a person. Now, little background information. Audge is an essential oil-loving, young living pusher, makes endless Instagram posts to make her and Jer look like they're two hippie millennials living off the grid. They're all granola, but they're woke, and they love God. All of this from the comfort of the house they bought in the suburbs with the money Jeremy likely earned from his years on reality television. We also need to put the big disclaimer about Audge's disapproval of Matt and Amy's divorce. That's right. Audge, well, I didn't even mention that, she calls herself Audge, A-U-J, short for Audrey. She and Jer think Matt and Amy just didn't try hard enough at their marriage and they don't believe in divorce. Hence her catchphrase, always more. You see, she used to take a Sharpie and scrawl that phrase all over her body when she was a cross-country runner because the Bible told her that there's always more to give, or some shit. So Audge and Jer also took this disapproval of the in-laws to a whole other level when they wrote a book on marriage. Mm-hmm, that's right, you heard me. A couple who, until a few months ago, didn't even own a house or have a child, were married barely 2 years or so, they have advice for all married couples. Weekly meetings with 7 questions you ask your spouse, and you're also supposed to recite your wedding vows while you're having sex. This is not a joke. Feel free to go back to episodes, I believe it's 5 or 6, and I read a portion from her book, or I don't even remember. I mean, I blacked it out. It is that bad. But go back and listen, and you will understand why we do not like Audge. Now, back to her telling us millions of women what being pregnant is like. It looks pretty tough to be her as she sits on a chair and winces as she watches Jeremy do everything. Ladies, moms, did you just sideline it for the whole 40 weeks when you were pregnant? And, you know, it's not like they're living in the house during this updating reno if you think I'm being hard on her. No, she's relaxing at her mom and dad's house while Jeremy is doing everything on her own. Now, just when we're wondering, hey, where is Father Matt? Here he comes in his little golf cart thingy. Now, he's now dating Karen, who she was, or she might still be, the farm manager. We used to see her all the time during pumpkin season. I mean, real life really is stranger than fiction, for sure. Now, if it couldn't get any weirder, they still have to live on the farm all together and run the business together. So Matt is in this smaller kind of guest house. Amy's in the big house. I mean, God, can you imagine having to see your exes come and go from your kind of sort of shared homes and property? Oh, I can't imagine it. Now, checking back in with Tori, Zach's wife, who we enjoy, she is at home holding their baby, who is seriously one of the cutest babies ever on TV. Well, in walks the red-haired narcissist who claims she's there to help Tori make Father's Day gifts for the boys. I loved this scene because it had to have killed Audrey to hear Tori giving her advice, because Audge was giving mom's advice on momming while she was still pregnant, if that gives you any glimpse into the type of person she thinks she is. Now, there are a lot of people and places on the show, so bear with me as we jump around, because we're going to go back to Amy's house where she's cooking up a meal for Zach because it's his first Father's Day and he really likes her spaghetti. Does anyone else remember when Amy was going to have a cookbook or something, or maybe it was a cooking show? Well, based on what she was using to make this fantastic spaghetti meal, I don't get it. She chopped up an onion and garlic, and then she just dumped in a half a can of tomato paste and stirred. I pray that we missed a whole bunch of steps in there, because seeing that made like the taste buds on the back of my mouth twinge in a bad way. So now we got to jump back to check in with Zach. He's bringing baby Jackson to Jeremy's house, and I don't know why this rubbed me so wrong, but Jeremy and Audrey were like, "You brought him, Zach? by yourself, by yourself, like he's not capable of doing it or something. I don't know. And then Zach didn't bring the diaper bag. And these two assholes start giving him such shit about it that they're going to have a diaper bag everywhere they go. They're going to have one for their car, one for their house, one for their stroller. Okay, tell us more how good of a parent you are when you're still 2.5 months away from giving birth. Keep it coming. Okay, God, I'm just getting started. Now, fast forward, Jeremy and Audrey are at Tori and Zach's house. I told you we're jumping around a lot. And while Tori, you know, the new mom with a 5-week-old who's probably lactating and still healing, she's busy shuffling around the kitchen, and freaking Aud is just sitting there, seeing how she had a sharp pain, and it was so bad. And you can see Tori is trying to be like, oh, wow, tell me more. But inside, she's like, yeah, that's called a baby kicking you in the ribs, you lazy ass. How about you get up and help me instead of sitting there flipping your hair around like Willow Smith? Somehow, Jeremy buys into her attention show because he says Audrey has an extremely high pain tolerance. Number one, how would you know that? How can you prove that? And number two, obviously not, because when she did end up giving birth, all of us who stalked her on Instagram know that she made out her birth journey to be the most painful birth of all the births of any mother who birthed. So this rib pain that she said she had, it was so bad that she was screaming in pain and Jeremy had to carry her to the car. Okay. And then when she went to the hospital, she said it was 2 hours of continued pain and then she was having all these contractions. What I would give for one of those nurses to drop me an anonymous note, send me a DM, an email. I would love to know what this brat was really acting like at the hospital. What was the real deal? Because in the end, she said they checked her. She wasn't dilated. They let her go home. They didn't see anything wrong. So we're really worried because we don't know what it could be. Well, Aud, it could be nothing because the hospital told you it was nothing. The only thing they diagnosed her with was pregnancy. Join the club, 1 year not head cheerleader in, which is why you have to manufacture stories to make yourself unique and special. Now another fast forward, Amy and her boyfriend go to Zach and Tori's house for an early Father's Day. She brings the spaghetti and also buys them a nice little patio set with an umbrella, table, chairs. Tori is so grateful and sweet, says she loves it, and you can tell she and Amy have a really good relationship with some really healthy boundaries. I think Amy probably gives them the space that they want and really need as a married couple because she trusts and loves Tori, and she knows that Tori is good for Zach. Meanwhile, over with frickin' Audrey and Jeremy, they're on their way to a normal OB appointment, but they're making it sound like, oh no, something bad's gonna happen there. And as soon as Jeremy asks her, like, hey, do you have any concerns? She goes, ow, she's doing some pretty sharp moves in there. I wish I had like an eye roll sound effect because, there's nothing I can say about this. So here's what happens. They go to the doctor and the doctor does the same thing every doctor does at every OB appointment. And guess what? Everything Audrey has experienced was normal. But you know what I noticed? Very quietly, Jeremy says to Audrey on the way out, after he felt where the baby's head was, I felt a little head. And he looks at her. And she looks at him and says, you're hilarious. I think what a lot of us have been speculating for months was correct. I think they secretly think between the two of them that their baby is better because she has a little head. Not like Jackson, who has a larger head because he's a little person baby. I mean, why else would Jeremy say that? It's a very weird and specific comment to make and to purposely say it under your breath while turned away from the camera. Okay, now what I'm about to say, I am not saying this to be mean. I swear to you, I am not, because I really like Amy and I love Zach, I love Jackson. way better than Jeremy and his offspring. But when Amy got on that motorcycle, do you think they have to worry about the legality of that? I'm asking because, okay, think about car seats. It's not necessarily age, right? It's height and weight. I don't want to get myself into any more trouble. I'm just saying, think about it. Now, Father's Day. Not much to say, but holy shit, Jeremy's hair. When he walked in with his hair down, he is treading very close to Cody Brown territory. He recently took a selfie that he tried to make look like someone else took it of him, but it is clearly a selfie from the angle that he took it. And his hair is blown dry into the Rachel. Just think about the amount of Drano or whatever essential oil they have to use to declog the drains at Jeremy and Audrey's house. It's no wonder they have to do a season of the show besides them having to do it because they have no jobs. But you get the point. There's a lot of hair going on in that side of the family. Now, I don't foresee myself watching this show regularly because Audge, I mean, she really does raise my blood pressure. But I gotta say, I do feel better after being able to just get it out of my system. Okay, right after my handy dandy transition music, let's talk some Married at First Sight. Oh, what a night on Married at First Sight. We are going to start with Jackie and Ryan and build our way up to the breakdown with Molly and John. First, we're in New York with Jackie and Ryan. They're still enjoying their time in the city together. Ryan really enjoyed the naked cowboy. I think he's probably jealous he didn't think of it first as a way to get attention. He desires so greatly on an hourly basis. But you know what bugged me even more than that? Jackie mentioned to Ryan that she really liked his eyes, and this guy can't even take a compliment gracefully. He responds by saying, "That's what they all say. You think you're the first woman to tell me that?" For real, dude, how about just like a, "Oh, wow, thanks," and reciprocate with a compliment? But no, I can see why his past relationships likely fell apart. The confidence and interest Ryan portrays up front in the beginning reveals itself to simply be an overinflated ego and narcissism that he projects onto whatever woman he's with. And when she isn't down to be just an object or a shell of a person he wants her to be, she's out of there and take your American flag undies with you. Well, fast forward to the next morning. Jackie tells us that last night, she and Ryan got into one of their biggest arguments yet. Ryan wanted to go out. She really didn't want to go, but she eventually went along, and Ryan says, out of nowhere, she jumped out of the cab. Doesn't sound like the whole story to me. Call me crazy, but Jackie doesn't seem like the type of person who's just all of a sudden going to jump out of a moving cab. Kind of like how she's going to abandon your imaginary children someday, right, Ryan? I would say it was probably something more along the lines of Ryan saying or doing something that caused Jackie to be like, okay, man, just go. I am not going to take one for the team tonight. But long story short, somehow Jackie ends up going back out. And then Ryan says something about decision day and just enjoying the moment right now, which leads Jackie to get upset again. There's clearly something we are not hearing. And what made me question this even more was that Jackie and Ryan were both wearing the same clothes as the day before when they were walking around the city with Naked Cowboy. So either the editing is jacked up once again, or these two are dirty little hamsters like Angelina on Jersey Shore and wear gross, dirty clothes that they've been wearing all around New York City for a second time. On the way back home, Ryan says he's just going to bite his tongue, call Dr. Pepper when they get back home, and if they can't have fun together, then why are they even still together? Now, what Ryan means, in my mind, is if Jackie isn't going to have fun the way that he wants to have fun, then why are they doing this? Because he wants things his way. Well, here we go. Dr. Pepper to the rescue. She senses Jackie's sadness right away, and immediately Jackie breaks down in tears. I think we all do that. Jackie says it's about this going out all the time thing, and they agree it's not going to happen again, but then it does. And Ryan says he's just as confused because he doesn't understand why it's a big deal. Finally, Dr. Pepper says what I've been hoping someone would say to Ryan. Ryan, you have to stop being so rigid about things. You have this idea about how a woman should fit in your life, and you can't do that. And stop using words like always and never, because life isn't like that. It made my spidey senses go off, or kind of like my slimy senses, when Ryan responds with a very ooey, gooey, over the top, well, I'm going to make it work because you are the one. You are the one I want to make it work with. I just don't feel that sincerity that I did when we first met him. And then it follows up later with how Jackie does fit into his frame of marriage, which he totally missed the point. Misaimed and misfired. I even took an accidental screenshot at the moment after he said this, and man, if body language could scream out loud. I posted it on, I think, Twitter in the Facebook group, but you can tell by Jackie's posturing, she is not buying it. Now, a final fast forward to bedtime with these two, and Ryan's wearing those crusty-ass flag boxers again. But in the end, they end the episode on a high note, saying that they've been through a lot and they're gonna keep trying. Aww. Yeah, well, we'll see. On to Shawnice and Jeff D. It's day 47 of marriage in the cornfield. Isn't that how all love stories start out? Now, I gotta tell you, the first line we hear out of these two, it just sums it up for all of us. Shawnice says, "You know I'm following you, right?" And Jeff D says, "Yeah, obviously." Now, we've seen it before. I've said it before. Shawnice is a clinger, and Jeff D is kind of a loner, and not in a bad way necessarily, but he's the kind of person that doesn't need to talk just to talk. And to be honest, I'm kind of married to a Jeff D, so I get it. The difference is Shawnice is taking it personally to such a degree that she feels like Jeff D is not talking because he's trying to isolate her on purpose or be malicious. I don't think either of them are wrong. I just don't think they are compatible yet in that respect, which is likely a personality trait that can't be changed easily, if at all, unless they really, really work on it. The editing of these two being all lovey-dovey and easy-breezy could be like a lot of people on social media. They're just showing us the highlight reel. And maybe that's just what happens when you get in front of a camera. I don't think anyone is going to want to be arguing on purpose in front of a camera. I think it's natural to act unnatural with a camera crew in your face. Do you know what I mean? Now, the argument in the car after the corn maze really confirms we've only been seeing the highlights. And there's still quite a bit of push and pull going on that we are not seeing. Jeff D still feels rushed and clung onto, and Shawnice is feeling deprived. Not a good feeling on either end. Now, fast forward to Dr. Pepper arriving at the Jeff D's. She senses the tension, and Shawnice explains what happened at that cornfield and on the way back. Dr. Pepper tries to understand it better, so she asks Jeff D a really interesting question. "So you're upset because Shawnice wasn't able to join you in your good mood?" And he says, "No, I'm upset because she ruined my mood with her attitude. I'm upset because she made the maze an overview of our relationship." Now, this is a tough one because Shawnice is trying to say that she needs to be able to express herself. But when she does express herself, Jeff D thinks she's being overdramatic and pushing things too quickly. I gotta say, Dr. Pepper throwing that Shawnice, come on, be a grown-up, I think that was a low blow for a therapist to say to their client. Way to make her feel even more uncomfortable, especially when she's saying she isn't allowed to express herself in front of Jeff D. Now, luckily, Shawnice does come back out. She explains that she doesn't say anything when she's feeling neglected because she is being aware of Jeff D needing time, so she's holding back. But over time, it builds up, and then it comes to a head. But then Jeff D is feeling like, whoa, where did this come from? Why the big reaction? Surprisingly, I mean, jaw on the floor once again. Jeff D has a tendency to do that to us all. He says, "You know what? You're right. I apologize. He wants to work it out. And then Dr. Pepper has to instruct him on how hugs work. Is anyone else feeling bipolar inside when you're watching this show? Damn it. Now, we have to fast forward once again. And surprise, Jeff D. bought Shaunice a puppy named Kiki. I think that was brilliant on Jeff D.'s part, because now Shaunice has something to cuddle and love on and get her Lenny from Of Mice and Men out onto instead of onto Jeff D. Kiki also serves as a nice little fortress barrier that Shaunice must climb over if she wants to get into Jeff D.'s space at night. It really was a stroke of self-preservation brilliance on Jeff D.'s part. Bravo. Now, here we are, Molly and John, what we all watched for. They're at the water park, and where do I even begin? Do I start with the hundreds of thousands of gallons of urine they're swimming in? Or John's feet resting upon her thighs? Being seen in a swimsuit in public? Or perhaps we should mention the threat of being tickled while being confined to an inflatable device flying through tubes at 20 miles per hour. If anyone, especially John, were to tickle me, anytime, anywhere, I don't care, I will kick you and thrash about like I am fighting off a kidnapper like Oprah taught me to. I will not allow myself to be tickled or taken to a second location. If your balls or nose, an eye, an elbow, if they get popped or broken, I'm not that sorry, because I have never heard of anyone who lists the number one thing they enjoy in life as being tickled, unless you're looking at some questionable websites or some right-wing politician's secret Craigslist ad. Moving on. Speaking of shady, 6 hours later, John is recording Molly in the background. He's mad because Molly was talking to a guy at the bar. "Would you like to respond?" we hear John asking Molly. Well, Molly snips back at John in the same tone that he's saying it to her, and she says that he's recording her because he's immature. Now, my first reaction, I agree with her. I think it is a very immature thing to do. It's like tattletaling. But let's keep rolling the tape. Well, then she calls him disgusting. Okay, I can't say I disagree. But yeah, it was not a nice thing to say. But neither was slut-shaming Molly. Now, the other thing that initially jumped out to me was John very quickly skimmed over the part where he said he, and I quote, tried to talk to her about it. He said she was talking to this guy at the bar. I didn't like it. I tried talking to her about it, and then she flipped out at me. Well, come on, guys, let's be honest. I have a very tough time believing John just very calmly tried to talk to her about it. I am certain he lost his temper, as anyone would, and it escalated rapidly because he was probably yelling and saying shitty comments to her, too. We have seen him do this before quite a few times and in public with other people around. I'm just throwing this out there as a very probable part of the story that John didn't record. Again, I'm not saying Molly was right in talking to some guy at the bar. It could have been totally innocent, and John didn't like the blow to his ego, or she could have been flirting with someone else, which is a totally shitty move on Molly's part. I'm just saying, think how you would react if your partner, who you just started dating, or even your partner that you've been with for a long time, your spouse, your fiance, girlfriend, boyfriend. Let's just say you were seeing a relationship therapist, okay? Later in the week, you're off on your own, you're having an argument, and your partner takes out their phone and starts recording you and asking you questions. That's antagonizing, and it's one-sided at that point. How else would you respond than to be defensive and point out that you're an adult and you're recording me to tattle on me? Now, fast forward to day 50, they're back from the trip, and John tells us that he and Molly haven't spoken since they've gotten back from Orlando. He says he's moved on emotionally and he's done. But he keeps going back to Molly saying, "When you touch me, it makes my skin crawl." Now, do I think it's a kind thing to say? No. Do I think it made her skin crawl because she wasn't attracted to him? Yes. Is she allowed to not be attracted to him? Yes. Again, it's not a kind thing for her to say. Neither is the stuff that he said about her to her. I'm just playing the devil's advocate here, okay? I'm not going to meet these people. I am not their judge or jury. We just have to remember we haven't heard the stuff that John said to her. But the things that we did hear him say weeks ago about her sexual history and past, it got a very easy pass from everyone, which in my mind, I think that is despicable. In my opinion, that sticks in my mind. And I think it's real easy for John to leave out the things he said that he did not record just prior to pressing that button. I think this is more about a bruised ego than a broken heart. Think about it. He's never said anything to make us believe that he was in love with Molly. It was always about how he thought it was about time that they banged it out already. Okay, now let's get to it. Here comes Dr. Jessica to the apartment. She's going to talk to Molly first. Molly said that they were listening to karaoke. Okay, so let's picture it. It's loud, it's noisy, and John starts saying some sarcastic things. And that's when she realized that he was upset. So she turned around where he was sitting and she was like, "What are you talking about?" But no, she doesn't regret anything she said or did. And she doesn't think that they even fought that badly normally when they were together. So Dr. Jessica doesn't say that much to her, just that she's going to talk to John and then they're going to come back together. But before we hear John and Dr. Jessica, Molly tells us that she doesn't think there's a chance for them anymore. The way things were going, with no physical intimacy going on, she was afraid John would snap, and that is exactly what happened. She said that John said a lot of nasty things to her, and that's just not her style. Well, I mean, she did say nasty things, so it maybe is her style, but that doesn't negate or wipe away the things that he said prior. Okay, now, John's turn. Dr. Jessica says, "Tell me about Florida." John claims he was getting one-word answers during karaoke, but then Molly started talking to some other guy. So John said, "Oh, so you're not tired and it's me. I'll just go home." And that's when he snaps and says, "She went irate." Okay, can we at least agree at this point? It's not John's style just to casually say, "Oh, so you're not tired, it's me, I'll just go home." No, I am 100% sure he was getting pissed and he was being sarcastic and saying shitty things to her like Molly said. Also, if you're watching karaoke and someone starts talking to you, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that you're going to respond and talk back to them. Maybe I'm a raging bitch, but I am sure there have been times in my life, in my relationship, when I've been upset with whether it be my husband or a family member or something, but I don't act like that to the person who's next to me on the train or in a restaurant or wherever I am. I guess I just needed to be there. I guess that's the whole point of the show, right? Okay, so now John shows Dr. Jessica the video, and although she doesn't like that he recorded it and did that, she understands why. Now, this is when we learn that what makes John even more angry than the recording, what got him angry enough to make the recording, was because Molly was dancing with him, in his words, grinding against him, and that's sending a mixed message because she also said that he makes her skin crawl. Now, I definitely have thoughts on that. But let's call Molly back in first to talk it out. So Dr. Jessica has John play the recording, and he sits back with his hands behind his head, and he crosses his legs and makes it look like, oh, he's the bullied victim. Molly is told that her words are vile. You are free to disagree with me. I'm sure most of you are at this point, but I think the word vile is a stretch. They were both upset. John was antagonizing her, saying, oh, that's a mature person's response. And again, we only saw one side of the argument because this was her response to his attack on her about talking to someone else. Dr. Jessica says that she would tell a couple in her office, how can you allow someone to talk to you that way in your home? How about ask Molly how she allows John to talk to her about her sexual history in her bed, Dr. Jessica? Roll that tape. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to tweet Dr. Jessica and ask her about that scene because I would love to tell her that I'm not comfortable with her double standards. And then I will cower and probably block her on Twitter, but I'm going to ask her. Now, she may not like Molly calling John disgusting, but maybe his actions and words that we have seen him say are disgusting. And in my opinion, John's assumption and expectation that Molly should just sleep with him because it's been a few weeks is disgusting. If you're still hating on my opinion here, I welcome differing opinions, but let me just ask you this. Why is it endearing to everyone once we realize Jeffy didn't want to sleep with Shaunice because he felt rushed and he wanted to build attraction, but with Molly, it's that she's an ice queen? As my old childhood priest used to say as he finished his homily, you can think about that a little bit. Well, that does it, friends. Remember to head on over to patreon.com/realityvpod for bonus episodes and Reality TV Podcast for links to everything and a little t-shirt and merch shop as well. Please remember to leave an iTunes review and help an indie podcast friend out. Every single rating or review helps out more than you know, and it only takes a minute. And of course, in the meantime, keep up with all the latest news and snark at Reality TV Pod everywhere. All right, let's all cross our fingers, Care Bear stare out some fabulous spring weather out to the universe so it can come back our way. Have a great weekend and stay salty.